2. Putting ourselves in a story. Clearing the preconceptions from our mental slates is not as easy as it might seem. As much as it may appear that we are no longer a Christian culture, we cannot help being inundated all our lives with subtle impressions about Jesus, both from within the church and outside it. These make it extremely difficult to feel the newness of the gospel as it burst upon the world of Galilee and Judea 2,000 years ago. Now, we can envision the world of Roman-occupied Palestine of that era. We can try to imagine what it was like when a man appeared who began to do things like turn water into wine, calm storms, walk on water, heal people, drive out demons, and draw large crowds and talk about God differently than any Jewish rabbi or prophet ever had. And that is helpful, trying to immerse oneself in that ancient world. But I find it difficult to put myself into that picture. It's not that I am incapable of conjuring up mental visions, but they are distant, far removed from the here and now of my daily existence. They are images from movies like Ben-Hur, The Rogue, and The Big Fisherman. From television documentaries and miniseries, from books I have read, and from my study of the New Testament. But it is not my world. I'm not part of a culture where people wear robes, where Roman legions ride about on horseback, where a nomadic lifestyle is still prevalent, where sheep and goats are likely to fill the streets of a city, where people sleep on the floor and travel by foot and sacrifice animals in the temple. I can try to imagine it. I can even pretend I am there. But I still bump up against a disconnect with actual reality, because mine is a modern world of cars and industry, of cities and electricity, of contemporary clothes and comforts, of airplanes and space exploration. And no matter what I do, I cannot fake out my consciousness entirely and really believe I am there. Can the gospel come alive in my world too? I need to pull up the top cellophane sheet of my image slate once again and erase all past preconceptions so that I can start fresher, yet closer, more immediate. I need to bring the gospel into this world where I live, rather than artificially trying to force myself back into a world of which I know so little. I need to ask not merely what it was like for the people of first century Palestine when an astonishing man appeared among them, I need to ask what it would be like for such a man to appear suddenly in my life, a man I have never seen before, never heard of, whom I know nothing about. Where are you at this moment, right now as you read? Pause. Look up, about, and into the world around you. What kind of setting is it? What do you see? The interior of an office, a campus, a residential district outside your window? Open countryside perhaps meets your eye, or a busy city street, a crowded subway or airport, the interior of your bedroom or living room or kitchen. Maybe you are seated in a library, a retirement home, a cafe or cafeteria or factory lunchroom. What would it be like if Jesus suddenly walked into the midst of your world, not in a white glowing robe, but looking like any other person, perhaps in a business suit? Would you leave everything to follow him? I happen to be looking out toward a stormy Pacific Ocean at this moment. We all live somewhere, and as I happen to live on the coast of Northern California, on most days, even when I travel, I can see the ocean. Right now, I am away from home about 2 hours north in southern Oregon. I am seated comfortably with paper and pen. Actually, I am writing this very book. The water's edge is about 200 yards from where I sit. Gray, menacing waves are crashing on a beach that at the moment looks very unfriendly. A small RV park with a few trailers sits to the left of my vantage point, past which a low ridge of sand covered with scruffy beach grasses and a few stunted fir and spruce separates it from the sea and parallels the shoreline for about a mile. Mingled with the sound of the waves, I can occasionally hear the traffic of the busy north-south highway about 50 yards behind me. Along both sides of this thoroughfare are located the motels and schools and stores, office buildings and restaurants of this small coastal town. Out in the water, a little way to the north, boats bob about, where they are moored in the harbor. After last night's storm, the fishermen are waiting for a break in the weather. That is where I am. Where are you? We are all somewhere in today's world right now. I think it would help each one of us to envision what it might be like if today, in the midst of our daily schedules, on your campus, in your office, out the window of your home, in the midst of city traffic and noise, in the room in which I am seated, or out the window where you... Wait just a minute. Something is going on over there, out on one of the grassy dunes I was just telling you about, beyond the RV park. I can't quite tell what... I see some people. Yes, now it looks like a small gathering is walking away from those trailers across the sand. I'm going to see if I can get a closer look. It's just a few moments later. I'm at the window, and it is just as I thought. There seems to be a man in front, walking up the grassy incline toward the beach with 10 or 12, maybe 15 people following him. But now I'm seeing more people coming out of the trailers and chasing after them to catch up. A few people have built a small fire out of driftwood on the beach. The wind is blowing this way, and I can just faintly catch a whiff of the smoke. But they're leaving it now, and are running after him too. I can't tell from here what it's all about. Maybe it's something to do with a group staying in their RVs together. But no, now people who have been walking along the water's edge looking for agates are hurrying over to join them too. It's probably 20 or 25 now. I am seeing people moving toward this little group from all directions, from up and down the beach, from across the dunes. The man in front is walking along in no hurry, but despite his apparent calm, the swarm of people around him is growing rapidly. I see both men and women, and now that I look more closely, there are a lot of children, too. Now people are pouring out of the trailer park. They must have all heard something. It's becoming almost a frenzy. He's made his way over to the grassy dune and is walking along the beach, everyone following. I can just manage to see them over the top of the rise of sand. Now he has stopped. He's talking to a few men at the water's edge, near where some of the fishing boats are tied up. Local fishermen, I assume. Perhaps they're talking about the potential catch during a stormy winter like this. Now he's on the move again. Several of the men he was just talking to have joined in and are walking along too, although it looks like they left behind some of the nets and equipment they had been working on. Something very unusual is going on, but they're almost out of my sight. No, the man just turned. He is coming back over the sand on a little pathway that leads toward the streets of the town and the highway. I'm going outside for a better look. I'll grab my pen and notebook so I can keep track of what's happening. No time to turn out the lights or lock up. I've got to catch up with the crowd and see what's going on. I'm outside now. The throng has reached the main street about a quarter mile from me. I'm running to get up to the trailing fringes as it heads towards the middle of town. It's really remarkable. There are so many people. It's not just the trailer park people and those from the beach. They're pouring out of motels and stores. Up ahead, there's a school. Hundreds of kids are flooding out. They may have to cancel classes for the rest of the day. Nobody's even trying to keep on the sidewalk now. The commotion is spilling onto the street. All around me, people are saying they've never seen anything like it. When the man left the seashore, there were probably 50 or 75 following. I now estimate the crowd at 300 and growing fast. Everyone is curious. Pandemonium is setting in. More and more are running up to join the throng, in tens and twenties, not just ones and twos. A small group is clustered in a circle around him as he walks. I think he is talking to them, but there is so much noise and hubbub, I haven't an idea what he might be saying. He's walking through the business district now. The crowd has grown to a throng, 500, 600, maybe 700. They're streaming out of stores and office buildings and grocery stores and cafes, past the small hospital, an eye clinic. Doctors and patients are pouring out, some still in green hospital gowns looking sick and feeble, but expectant. Traffic is backing up. The streets are filling with people. Nobody can go anyplace. All of downtown is congested. I'm doing my best to press forward through the madness, but not having much luck. I've got to get closer so I can get a better look and find out what has everyone so excited. It's a few minutes later. It's grown to over 1,000 people now. It's huge. The whole town is virtually shut down. Bumping and crowding about me on every side, I hear people abuzz with questions. "Who is he?" they're saying. "What's it all about? Have you heard what he said? Where are we going?" No one seems to know any more than I do, or why this multitude is following the man that started it all. Most are tagging along out of curiosity. How can you see something like this and not jump up and follow? The minute I saw people running, my curiosity was aroused. I couldn't help wanting to see what it was about. We're past the business district and have reached the outskirts of town now. The crowd continues to surge slowly along. "He's moving toward that hill on old Zeb's property, on the other side of the highway," I hear someone say. In the distance, other voices and shouts raise themselves above the roar of the crowd. "There's going to be a speech. He's about to tell us what's going on." I hear a few people talking about hurrying home to grab some lunch first, and then coming back for the speech. I'm still trying to squeeze my way through. I'm getting closer to the man. I still can't see quite all the way to the front, where the small group surrounds him. A minute or two more has gone by. I'm beginning to catch sight of the inner circle. They are listening intently. Yes. There are a few of the local fishermen, just as I thought, along with a three-piece suit type, a banker or lawyer perhaps, several women, two or three laborers, a teacher, I think, someone wearing a uniform who looks to be a government official, and several others. I can't tell much about them. I'm getting a few glimpses of the man himself. He looks ordinary enough. Nothing remarkable that I can see. Certainly nothing that explains all this. He's not movie star handsome. Medium build, light brown hair ruffled a little and blowing in the gentle breeze. Average features. He's dressed casually, not in a business suit. Simple denim trousers, long-sleeved blue wool button-down shirt, and outdoor walking shoes. He's no one famous that I've ever seen. He is talking, gesturing about occasionally to the men and women with him. His face is serious, though not stern. They must be discussing something important. They are hanging on his every word. I can barely hear his voice. I'm still trying to inch closer to see if... He is slowing. Now he has ceased to move altogether. Those next to him come to a halt. Gradually the whole multitude bumps to a standstill. He has stopped talking. Expecting something, the crowd grows silent. Slowly the man turns around. Now for the first time I see his face clearly. It is a surprising face, not for its features, but for its expression. But I have little time to ponder it. He is scanning the multitude, looking for something, looking for someone in the midst of the vast throng. Slowly, his head pans back and forth. Then his gaze comes to rest. A chill sweeps through my body. All of a sudden, I am aware he has found what he is searching for. He is looking straight at me. All around, the crowd that was pressed so close begins silently to move away from where I am standing. Slowly, everyone backs further and further until I am left alone. No one is within 20 feet of me. I feel exposed, vulnerable, naked. More than 1,000 silent stares are resting upon me. The intensity of the man at the center of this frenzy is most penetrating of all. For he too is silent, his gaze riveted toward me. Our eyes meet. I am rooted to where I stand. Trembling, goosebumps crawling over my arms and neck. I have no idea what this is all about. I had only been one of 1,000 others a moment before. Suddenly I find myself at the heart of the uproar. The man's friends are staring at me too, waiting to see what I will do. How long we remain like this, his eyes probing my very soul. I don't know. The crowd continues hushed. The whole town stands still. Perhaps, as far as I know, the whole world. There I stand like a statue, the man's eyes boring into mine. Then I perceive that he is about to speak. He does not exactly smile, but his expression is warm, friendly, inviting. I sense that he knows me, that he has known me all the while, even as I first sat watching from a distance, knowing that he would walk within sight of my window, knowing that I would look up and see him, and knowing that I would drop what I was doing and follow. At last he nods imperceptibly, gestures with his hand to indicate that he wants me to walk forward and join him. Finally, he speaks. Everyone probably hears, for it is so quiet. But I know his words are meant for my ears alone. Perhaps I should say they are meant for my heart. I want you to come with me, he says. Then he turns and begins walking again in the direction he had been going before. Still stunned that I have been singled out from among so many, what can I do but what he says? By now I have completely forgotten how quickly I had dropped what I was doing to hurry after him, leaving the lights on and the door unlocked. I have forgotten my book, my schedule, my plans for the day. How can one not follow? His presence is so commanding, so full of authority. How can we not go with him, you and I? For he has spoken to us both. Who wouldn't run along at first to see what it is all about? You leaving your comfortable homes and offices and schools and factories and churches and businesses. Me jumping up from where I sat and leaving my work behind. Yes, I followed, from a distance, gradually moving closer, trying to learn more. But then suddenly I am no mere spectator. He has found me in the midst of the multitude. His eyes have locked into mine, and he has said, "Come with me." I want to follow, want to be part of it, though I still don't even know what I am being drawn into. It seems there is no place else to be, no place that one would want to be than here with him. I hesitate only a moment, then hasten forward at a half run to join the circle of those closest beside him. The multitude closes around again. It doesn't occur to me until sometime later that I still don't know the man's name. From Jesus, an Obedient Son, by Michael Phillips. Read by Michael Kimball. More information on this and similar writings may be found at fatheroftheinklings.com. Visit Amazon to purchase Jesus, an Obedient Son, and other books by Michael Phillips.